Welcome to Hug It Out America. Welcome to Hug It Out America Radio, where I hug America from the safety and comfort of my lazy boy. Yet again, it is cold here in Massachusetts. It's raining. I will say again, where the hell is spring, or at least summer? Something, man. Anyway, let's talk about today. We got a great show. I got my friend, an awesome hug man, Tex Allen, on the line in just a minute to talk to us. But I want to let you know, you can stream all my past shows on demand at 50hugs.org/radio. You can sign up to be a citizen of Hug It Out America there and get info and videos and some freebies too. Last thing I want to talk about, I want to tell you what we got on track for the rest of the week. So on Wednesday, we have Nate Saul coming in, who is the founder of a company called Cocaterra Chocolate, and it's an amazing chocolate machine that they are selling now, so you can make chocolate from your house. He's going to talk about why he came up with that product and a little bit about him and where he got one. Just an interesting guy, I want you all to meet. And then on Thursday, we have Scott Hogue coming in, a buddy of mine I met through Hug It Out America, through Facebook, and then on the road. I visited him in Nashville, Tennessee. Had a great time hanging out with him, me and my daughter. We're hanging out in the back of his Cadillac. He was playing songs, serenading my daughter. And he is an amazing musician, a great songwriter, and flat-out hilarious. Y'all will love him on Thursday. So that's who we got on track for this week. But right now we got on the line, I think, Tex Allen. I'm going to come. I think he's a long way away. I think he's in another country. Let's see if we can get him on here real quick.
Yeah, good morning, Billy.
Tex, how you doing, man?
Fantastic, man. How are you?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you. Thanks so much, man.
How are things in Mexico?
They're really wonderful. Overall, they're great. The sun is out, palm trees, not too many clouds today, and about a mile from the beach.
What's the temperature there?
Oh, man, let me look. I think it's about 80, something like that.
You can make me cry, man. It's like 45 degrees here.
Everybody's got choices, you know what I'm saying? It's 75. It's 70 degrees right now. It's going to get up to about 75, but it feels about 10 degrees warmer.
Oh, man, that's nice.
Yeah.
Are you in sandals?
Yes, beautiful. No. But sometimes I am. Yeah. You know, the thing is, we didn't really plan on being here as long as we're going to be here, since things have changed.
Yeah.
So I didn't really bring a lot of summery clothes. I only got a little bit of stuff like that. So no complaints, though. I mean, we're far removed from everything that's happening in the States at this point. So,
well, Tex, I was trying to remember, did we originally meet on Facebook?
Yeah, I think we did. We must have originally met on Facebook because you were out there doing what you were doing, and we got connected through some other huggers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And then we got together in San Francisco when I was up there last summer on my hug tour, and we gave a lot of hugs out on by the ferry building, right, in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. What, like 3 hours between you and I and a couple of the people? I mean, it's just nonstop. He must have given out a few hundred hugs minimum.
Yeah, it was a good time. And
yeah.
What I love about you, man, is you just have like this no fear of words or hugging or any of that stuff, man. I so dig that about you, how when you're out there and it, you know, and I think I got my inspiration from you, Tex, because I would see you on those videos and you would be at the train station down at BART holding your sign up, right?
Yeah. For everybody who's listening in, I'd be down there one of the train stations in the San Francisco area's BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, and I would go down there and hug. And later, I even I even applied to get a permit to be there as a public expression. You know, they have a way you can apply to actually physically have the right to be there. So people can't tell you, hey, you can't, you know, you got to move along with the free hug sign. And I signed up for Church of Hugs with them, and they gave me a permit. So, you know, I have the right to be there right along with the Jehovah's Witnesses and anybody else. I could be there whenever I wanted to at any location, and the cops or anybody
could
take us out. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm committing a crime because I think it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission sometime, and I've never asked for any permit where I live.
Oh, me either. No, I'm the guy. I'm just going to do it until you tell me not to. But I thought, you know, just for the fun of it, that way we could always tell other people, hey, join us. We have a permit. And that way, you know, people would stop and ask, hey, you know, why you do this? How you here? And sometimes I would tell them, yeah, you know, we have this Church of Hugs and we got a permit. And that what that did was really more than anything, it legitimized our presence there, which gives a lot of people, you know, more reasons to hug you and less pause about, hey, you know, here's somebody weird just standing here with a hug sign. You know, you've been through that.
And there's nothing more legit than a hug, right? It's through science, and you just feel it. I mean, people, you can't deny the power of a hug.
No, that's just it. Like, we are all energetic beings. I mean, we are made of energy. At the base level, there is no bone, there is no blood, there is no flesh to you or I or anybody else. When you get down as far as we've been able to see so far, it's just squiggly lines of energy. And where does that energy come from? It comes from your heart. And what is and you are basically, you are a heart that is walking around. You know, like the first thing that develops when you're an embryo, organ that develops is your heart, because that's what keeps you going. And you actually turn inside out from your heart. So you are an extruded inside out heart walking around. And that's the center of your energy. And the heart energy can travel, there is no logical distance, but they've measured it as 1,000 times the power of your brain. So you are just, you are a heart of energy walking around, throwing out energy in a toroidal donut shape. As strong as that heart is, that's how far your field is, right? So most people's field is, funnily enough, for this social distancing, the field extends about 6 feet, and that's the average range. And the stronger your heart is, you know, the more that you draw in people, because like energies attract. Again, you said this is all science. So when like energies attract, they pull together. And when they pull together in the same frequency, that's called entanglement and resonance. You know, just like when a lot of people start humming, you've seen that, you know, 10 people in the room start humming the right vibration, and a wine glass is going to break. That's resonance.
Yep.
So same thing with the human heart. You're out there broadcasting it. Somebody comes and hugs you. Our energy fields throw out even more energy. Somebody will be walking by, freaking feels that. They want to come in for a hug. Same thing as starting a fight at a football game over in Europe. You know, you see people, blah, 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 fuck your team, meh, 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 meh. And suddenly there's 2,000 people fighting and, you know, a bunch of bleachers fell over. Yeah, man. Same thing.
So how did you originally get into the hug thing? How long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it for about, you know, for a long time now that I look at it. But it kind of started breaking through to me about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago, with a community I'm in at Burning Man. And then in the last 6 years or so, I started doing it as like a public love stunt when we were out doing other things in public, as, you know, what people might call flash mobs, but going out and doing in public, doing fun things for other people to break them out of their shell, you know, doing something ridiculous and cacophonous, and kind of like, what's that about? Why are they doing that? So sometimes I would just go in and throw hugs in on top of it, because I had seen it at Burning Man and in the Bay Area where I was living, where, you know, it's like Left Coast Central. So of course you're going to see people with hug signs every now and then. And I just started doing it because it resonated with me. And once I did it a couple of times, I knew that it was just immediately something I could go back to whenever I wanted to, just take a sign out and immediately feel better and get myself in a better place. And I just got immediately changed me, immediately.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, so when I was going this summer, and like I say, I don't know anybody who's probably give more hugs in a year than me. You may have, because I know you. You've been doing a lot, and I'm sure you're doing some in Mexico when you get the chance, or when you get the chance, because it's a virus thing. I guess you're not able to do it just yet, but yeah. We'll get there. But what I was going to say is when I was out on my tour, and I know this is something you've done way before me, I finally did what I call a 30-second hug, and there's scientific evidence that if you hug for somebody more than 20 seconds, then it's therapeutic value. It's scientific therapeutic value. And I'm sure that you've done some of those. The ones that I have done, I've been amazed the emotion that have come out of people that are complete strangers that come up crying with tears streaming down their face. I'm assuming you've had some of that similar experience.
Yeah, yeah. The thing about you're talking about, well, for like it's just these long hugs, at least 20 seconds or longer. I mean, I don't know if they really have like a name, but the science behind that is when two people hug for 20 seconds or longer, and they are hugging left to left, and which is a change, because most people hug right to right as you reach in for a hug, but if you hug left to left, then you're actually aligning your hearts. That's when your hearts are lined up when you're in that embrace. And they've proven that after 20 seconds of hugging like that, where you're really hugging, you're into it, you let go, and you're present with it, during that time, after 20 seconds, your heart rates are synchronized. So they are beating at the same time, at the same rate. And typically, most people don't experience that unless they are in a romantic relationship and maybe they've done something like that and they've purposely done it, or they usually only experience that when they are inside their mother in the womb. So that's why these massive emotions come out of people when they're giving you these long hugs or when they've accepted them. And they're actually reciprocating because they are letting themselves be vulnerable to a point that they do not understand it, but it's the same vulnerability they were at when they were inside their mother before they knew, quote unquote, right from wrong, before they had any worldly experiences. You're bringing them back to that place that their body remembers as a place of complete safe and safeness and solitude and just joy and wonder and love. And that's what breaks them out. I mean, I'm with you, man. I mean, I've asked people to accept these hugs, or I've asked them to say, hey, have you had like a 20-second hard hug? And they hadn't. And it absolutely can transform people in 20 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about the whole thing about the syncopated and rhythm heartbeat thing. That's a new thing you're telling me. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. It came out of the HeartMath Institute in Boulder, Colorado, who's been studying this for like 20 years now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really good. So when you're on the street, you know, let's get real. So get real for a minute. When you're holding your son, what percentage of the people you think that come by actually give you a hug or want a hug?
You know, I mean, you've been out there hugging like I have. So it's really situational, and it also depends on, you know, geographic, you know, everything's different. But I would say that overall, gosh, I mean, maybe 5%, if that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is just being really real. It's about 5%, but, you know, some days, you know, like I've been at certain flea markets, or not flea markets, farmers markets, and you know, I've been at some farmers markets where the demography of it was like more Latino and family oriented in the Bay Area where I was, and sometimes it's been like 30-40% of the people. It just depends on where you are, but you know, again, overall 5-10% if I'm lucky.
Yeah, I was over in Dominican Republic. I took my free hug sign over there, and the people in Dominican Republic, man, I was getting all kinds of hugs. I was getting it from, you know, people on the street, people on the beach, you know, people in restaurants, you know, wherever. It was just, you know, I think it, you know, also depends on the culture, right? It has an effect on, like you said, about
it's the culture.
About
it's
whether
like, you know, in Dominican Republic. Yeah, yeah, because Dominican Republic is like Mexico, Latin countries, where people are familial, they're grown up with a great sense of family, a respect for the elders. They they by default create a social net for their entire populace. You know, people are more outgoing and friendly. They shake hands. Even if you watch them, they hug. And in America, it had just gotten to the point before the coronavirus where, you know, the height of hubris and ego and hatred, et cetera, you know, just push people so far from each other that, you know, you and I are out there and like 90%+ of the people are just giving us looks like we're nuts. And it's it's the cultural environment.
And it's interesting, you just made me think of a story. I don't know if you've had anything like this. When I was in Dominican Republic, I was walking with the daughter, the beach with my daughter, and I had my sign, and we got to the far end, and I got, like, stung by this jellyfish. And I was in a lot of pain, and I was limping. But on the way back, I've got, like, 30 or 40 hugs, and honestly, it's like the pain was gone. It was the weirdest thing in the world that happened. I don't know if you had anything where it's been some miraculous like that. I mean, it sounds like something you hear from like a evangelistic preacher or something like that, but man, I'm for real. It happened. I'd forgotten about that because you just mentioned that. Interesting
stuff
like that.
Yeah, but
you
are an evangelist. I mean, well, I've never had pain like that go away, but you know, I don't have any doubt at all. I mean, it's surprising to hear it, but it's not surprising in practice to know that, yeah, if you got stung by, you know, a jellyfish or a ray or whatever, and you're really hurting, all of your nerve endings are lit up because of that poison in your system for a while, right? But what happens then when people come up and start hugging you, that's the endorphins, the serotonin, and your heart telling your nerve collectors, your nerve receptors, your sympathetic system is being flooded by serotonin, by oxytocin, by love, which then overrides the pain in your system. It's just like, you know, you see somebody who gets a massive car wreck and there's somebody trapped in a car and, you know, maybe, you know, like in an action movie in real life, you know, their legs bleeding and their arms falling off, and they go and they freaking pick that car up and flip it over in some miraculous stunt.
Yeah.
No, it's just because the infinite power that they are invested in as a fractal of creation, God, source, whatever. You have the ultimate power. You are Superman, whatever you want to say. Focused in on that and said, because of love, because I had a feeling so much for the person inside trapped in the car in that example, that all of that power focused in and allowed me to do that through the action of love. Doesn't matter what my physical body was doing, because that physical body is just energy anyway. It just all got focused. So, I mean, it's amazing. That's a fantastic story. I'd never heard anything like I got stung at the beach and I got rid of it.
Yeah, I got stung. I mean, it was something that stung the crap out of my foot. I'm guessing it was a jellyfish, but I was just like, ow, man, frick, that hurt. And then that's the only thing I can guess it was. And then I went down the beach, and it's like I forgot about it. And my daughter's like, Dad, I'm like, I don't know what happened. You know, don't ask me. I just know I don't feel the pain anymore. I mean, I don't know if this happened to you. Like, I'll have, like, a bad day. Maybe my kids will be driving me nuts, or maybe my wife will get in a fight, or something will go wrong. I'll just take my free hug sign. I go out the door for an hour, and by the time I'm back, I'm in a better mood. It's actually better than exercise. I used to use exercise, but now I feel the hug gets me out of that mood better than anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's just it, because it immediately takes you to presence, right? So you're there, you're present. The only thing that matters is that hug, because you went out saying, I want to do this intentionally. So you focused on that. And then you took your heart along with you saying, I'm going to go out and basically focus and give out love. And you also surrendered by saying, okay, I'm going to physically go out with the sign, giving out love. I'm going to be present and I'm going to be here with it. And I'm not going to judge whether I get a hug or not. I'm just here giving it out. So then, you are in a complete state of zero. Like, you're in the middle, you're calm, you're in the eye of the storm. And the minute someone comes in, there's the validation that you were looking for. Because, you know, I've done that a million times. You know, like, had a bad day, like I said. You know, woke up, everything was great, but then suddenly things went shitty. Wah, wah, wah. Like, 2 hours later, I'm off my game. And when I had the option, I'd pick up a hug sign and go to my favorite corner, whatever was close by where I was. And knowing that I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get validated and show love, and exactly the right person would show up. Oftentimes, I've been sure it happened with you, with a story or a reason they came in to hug. It just lit your heart up so much you go, wow, that's what I came here for. And that's,
yeah,
you know, that's God's source, whatever you want to call it, saying, here, here's the validation to show you that you're not wrong, that you matter, that you're loved, and that the rest of the world is not a bad place, and they're just as scared as you, and they need what you need. Because since everything is a mirror, you're out there shining a light out to the mirror, waiting for that reflection to show up. Yeah, it's, I tell people, like, you want to get out of it, you want to get in a great mood, get a hug sign, go out to a populous place, and just wait for love to come in and show you that everything is okay.
Well, and here's another thing about you and everybody I've met who give hugs. You know, you kind of think of that word, and you think kind of, I don't know, you kind of think like this person is giving hugs, and they're soft, and they're weak. But people who give hugs have balls. They have freaking balls of steel, buddy, because they're out there holding that sign, putting themselves on the line to give love. And not everybody can do that. You and I both know that. To have that power to say, you know what? You said 95% of the people don't give you a hug. Sometimes you said it was like 75% don't give you a hug. But the numbers are usually against you. But to have the balls to get out there, what I call love fierce, and just love the world and show what you got to give, takes a special person and takes something with inside you to make it happen.
I appreciate that. You know, it takes, and you're there too, you know, like you said, but it's not, I don't know if it's much as much of a special person as it is, I just got lucky.
Special,
well, I didn't get lucky.
Word. You're right.
No, yeah, but I mean, everybody has this in them, but it really is just getting to the point where you see everybody as you. That's what,
yep,
that's the point where it flips, you know, like, and that's difficult to do, you know, and that takes a lot of letting go, a lot of unlearning. Like Yoda said, you must unlearn what you have learned, because, you know, most people,
yep,
look at the world as a physical thing. It's like, okay, I was created, or I landed here, or whatever it is, I'm here. The rest of the world is separate from me. I have to survive in it. I have to make my way in it, because it's, everything out there is not me. So I am a physically disparate entity in an environment versus I am that environment. Everybody out there is me. And this whole thing is just one big illusion, you know, and this goes into the deep esoteric studies, or, you know, every major book says this, you know, the Bible, the Quran, doesn't matter. Every ancient text, every ancient sect, religion, whatever you want to call it, all says that this is one living environment. This is one thing. Science has now proven that. And only via going out and stepping outside of your zone into that uncomfortable area will you get validated to the point where, you, as more people come in and hug you, in this example, then you see that everything is the same, that everybody's feeling the same way you are, that we're all in this together, and we are all one thing together, you know, because it's just one big energy ball. And once that breaks in you, and I can't tell you how it will break in you or anybody else, that's when suddenly, yeah, it's okay to go out with a hug sign, because I know that I'm just standing there waiting for the environment that is me to respond to this action.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a physical,
amen,
person,
yep,
thing anymore. It's like, hey, I'm going to go out. Here we go. I'm going to throw the energy out. Let's see what comes back. And boom, boom, it just keeps happening. So it's really not bravery. It's just like surrender. And I guess if you get down to that, then surrender is the ultimate bravery, because you're saying ultimately when you surrender like that, that I'm not in control. That by giving away your power, you get to the place where you are the most powerful you'll ever been, because you're acting in complete trust and you're allowing that energy to come back and give you what you need, versus you having to go out and be an entity that takes it.
Yep, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's a good point. But I do think there is an element where you have to You are putting yourself out there, and you are kind, mm-hmm, of saying, I'm going to sit up, I'm going to do this, and knowing that not everybody's going to want to hug. And it takes a fire within you to do that, like you said. It takes that love that you want to outpour and know that there's somebody out there that needs that. And my question to you that I just thought of, is there anybody in all the, you know, thousands of hugs you give it, is there anybody that you said, nah, I can't hug that person?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't.
Never.
I mean, that's the way I feel too.
I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, there have been some people that, you know, because, you know, no, I'm not perfect. You're not. I mean, I'm sorry. You're perfect. I'm perfect. Our ego tells us we're not. But yeah, there's been some times where it's been like, you know. Yeah, and I'm sure you've had this where people come up and you kind of feel that the hug, you know, is not sincere. Typically, this is like a guy will be pushed at me from his girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, go ahead, hug him. Or like bros will push their buddy at you. Give that guy a hug,
yep.
Man. Right? Yeah. And those, it's like, well, you know, I know the hug is not really sincere, but I never think I don't want to hug the person. I just like, okay, I'm going to give this my best shot, but I know coming in that he doesn't really want it. But no, there's nobody I've never said, no, I don't want to hug that person. Because if I ever looked at somebody and thought, I don't want to hug him, then that's me rejecting me. That's me saying that part of me, that fractal, that other part of me, that other person who is me in a different body, that I am rejecting that person. Therefore, I am rejecting me. And why would I want to reject myself? Because many times, you know, people, and I know it's happened to you, people have come in that maybe they looked like there's not somebody who would typically want a hug. And I'll just go ahead and rationalize, give an example, like some thugged out brother, you know, like, big tough, you know, wearing all the stuff, like, yeah, man, I don't need no hug, whatever.
Yep.
And then walking like, you know, they got a big chip and like they swagged out, and then boom, somebody like that just does a 90 degrees and crying out, and they just come in and hug you. And they cry in your arms, you know, like, I've had big dudes do this, you know, and it's like, the one person I didn't expect a hug from, he comes in and tells me he hadn't had a hug because he just got out of jail and he hadn't had any human contact in like 7 years. And the last person to hug him might have been his father. I got one of those stories. You know, the last person to hug was my father, and then I went in jail and he died. So I was like the first person this guy hugged in 7 years. And
yeah,
if
that
had,
something happened,
you know,
to me like that,
some,
similar to that.
Yeah? Yeah, tell, right?
I mean,
so
you get
somebody
those stories,
I've
right? You always get those stories where you feel like there's, like, I had a guy on my show last week. His name is Ken, and he wrote a book called Synchronicity, Ken Harris. There's, like, synchronicities and things where they're meant to happen. Like, you were meant to be there and comfort that person,
yep.
or empower that person or whatever. And it tied right in.
Oh, yeah.
And there are people like that that just happen in your life, and you see these synchronicities happening, you know. It's a pretty cool book. I hadn't been able to read it, but it just made me think of that. You know, I gotta say, probably the most challenging hug I did with this guy that I pretty sure was a white supremacist, and he had like a shirt on, and I ended up giving him a hug anyway, and I just, the one I felt kind of, it was hard to do, but I was like you. I felt like he's me and I'm him. We're both humans underneath it all, and I'm going to look past all that and just give him a hug, you know. And those kind of, I think we just got to see that we're all humans underneath, right? Even though we might not have the same views, and embrace that inner person in them. And maybe that would soften their heart at the same time, right?
Totally. That's it. Like, he's out there wearing his, you know, he had on a shirt, like you said, right? So here's somebody who is wearing his hate, wearing his hurt for the whole world to see.
Yeah.
Broadcasting it.
Yeah.
It's like you had your hug sign on.
Yep.
And you're right, like, because you were there. I mean, speaking of the synchronicities, that's just one of the things I go out for, like going back to your discussion about having a bad day. It's like I go out and I know that synchronicity, that me putting out that energy will bring exactly the right person at exactly the right time, as long as I have no attachment to the act. And then people come up and it's like one lady in Palm Springs came up to me one evening. There's a big outdoor farmer's market and you know, general like market carnival thing that happens every week there during the week on Thursday nights. Like thousands of people show up, hundreds of vendors. And I would be parked at a Starbucks, right in the middle of downtown Palm Springs, this, you know, gorgeous flagship Starbucks. And I had the whole corner every Thursday night. And a lady came up and she looked at me sheepishly. She had a friend with her. She's like, "Can I have a hug?" And I said, "Of course." And about 5 seconds in, she just starts crying. And when we got done, she told me that that night would have been she and her husband's 40th wedding anniversary. And he had passed the week before. And I was like, there it is. That's why I was there. And sometimes I need the message. People come up and hug me and tell me exactly what I know I needed to hear. And I just see those moments as like, yep, this is it. This is the divine message that this person, you know, because I stopped at the stoplight a little, 3 seconds, a little extra long, and couldn't get a parking space and got out here with my hug sign exactly at this second, that's why I came. And everything lined up to get me there. So you realize that your hugging mission really isn't always about you. It's this act of love out in the world that is just attracting what has to happen to raise everybody's vibe. And in that moment, you were the savior or somebody was your savior.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Have you always been like a hug guy? Have you been that way your whole life? You always hug other people?
That's just it. Not at all. Not at freaking all, man. I was not a hugger.
And you grew up in Texas, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say I think you know the story. Like I grew up in Texas, and that's why they called me Texan Burning Man. They thought it was funny, and it stuck. But you know the backside to Texas, that growing up in Texas, that, you know, I'm 53, so I grew up in the 70s and, you know, had the idyllic childhood by all means, you know, the Schwinn bike, you know, with the banana seat and the Evel Knievel toys and baseball. And
I love the Evel Knievel.
Right, Evel Knievel toy, Hot Wheels, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Saturday morning cartoons, everything.
Rock'em Sock'em
really
Robots.
Great. Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and yet I also grew up in the South in Texas during, you know, in the Bible Belt and going to church Monday and Wednesday and twice on Sundays, and an environment where the masculinity growing up there is toxic. It's like, you know, men don't cry, pull up your boots, hard work, blah blah blah, toughen up. You know, et cetera, be a man in this, you know, environment of cowboys and, you know, it's the backdrop of Americana. And there was no hugs. You know, I mean, one thing I did learn that came out was a great handshake. You know, people told me, God damn, man, that's a great handshake. And I learned
Texas. Try to break the hand. Yeah, I know.
But, you know, the perfect, firm, I'm a man handshake, nice to meet you. But it was also that way of putting your hand out and keeping yourself away from somebody else. Because it's also like, don't you touch me, homo. Don't you get near me. I'm a man. We're going to shake hands.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
And when I got to San Francisco 15 years ago, you know, within weeks, I went from being the suburban life as the weird person, thrown into this mix of the most creative, weird, out there people ever. And they were all huggers. And they were hugging each other, and I was just not about it. Also, and just before I landed there, the quick story is my ex-wife now and I had almost got pulled into a Christian cult where they love bomb people. You know,
they
give
what?
Love, give love, love bomb people the way cults do. So it's like, you know, hey, we like you, and suddenly everybody's your friend, and giving you love, and they're inviting you to stuff. And their thing was also hugging. This particular sect of Christianity that we almost got caught up into at that time. And so all these loving and hugs, once we found out they were not these people we thought they were, that was my last breaking point with organized religion. And then within a few months, I'm out in San Francisco and life had changed. So I had not wanted to hug people, especially since they were all people that looked like the kind of people I thought I wanted to know and wanted to ultimately be around. But here they are hugging, et cetera, and I had such a negative impact about hugs that it took literally years for me to even accept hugs in the middle of the Burning Man community of all places. So, no, it was this, you know, it was a lightning bolt. It was divine transformation, you know, within my community that got me to be a hugger. I had no desire to hug anybody.
Did it happen through Burning Man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say just the event, because it's really the overall community, because it's, you know, based in San Francisco, and all the people who created it at the original ground point were there. So that influence, you know, the psychedelic 60s in San Francisco and the Summer of Love, that whole environment engenders this kind of stuff. I mean, that's where I first saw people with free hug signs at events, at Burning Man style events, at outdoor dance parties, at gatherings. So, you know, I had seen them on the internet before that, but I never thought anything of it. And then there I was in person. So all these people telling me it's okay, it's safe, and then demonstrably showing me their love, their support, their compassion, got me to the point where I could trust it. And once I started trusting it, I wanted it. And once I really wanted it, then it came to the point where, yeah, hell yeah, I'm going to take a sign out and see how this works. So it definitely came to the community. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's kind of funny and kind of scary how much me and your my life and your life parallel. It's amazing to me the way you were talking about how you grew up. You know, I grew up in the South, too. I grew up in South Carolina. My family pretty much doesn't hug. I mean, I rarely hug my brother still. I hug everybody, but we haven't been able to get past that. And for the longest time, I had a hard time hugging my mom. It was just kind of the way the culture was growing up in the South. And I moved to San Francisco, too, for a while. And I got involved with a cult with a very different reason. And it's amazing how we have similar things that eventually led to this. And what I would say is, which is for another show, is I think a key to helping America with less violence is for men to grasp onto this idea that they don't have to be tough anywhere, and to turn that testosterone that wouldn't necessarily might prove a physical reaction, a fight or something, and use that to talk about their feelings and get those out, to where some of these things might not happen, these horrific events that happen. And I think part of that is a hug. It's about changing the idea of who men really are, right?
It
we
is.
Don't have to always be tough all the time. And it just made me...
Tough.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
You know, I was just saying, I just, you know, as a kid, I got in a lot of fights, and I didn't really share much about anything, and then I moved to San Francisco, and I was actually pretty homophobic when I got here, to be honest. And it took living in San Francisco and then being around people and not kind of having that, you know, you only shake hands and you got to be tough all the time. And it's just amazing what similar kind of backgrounds we have. I actually never would have guessed that you had a similar background to me. Just from top,
it's great, yeah, because here we are. I mean, you know, like you said, like energies attract like energies. That's physical quantum science. You know, we know this to be true. So a lot of people I've found, you know, who are in the hug game have these similar stories of, you know, a childhood that hugs weren't around. Maybe there was abuse. There was, you know, being distanced from people because of what our beliefs were or whatever happened. Like, you know, it all adds up to whatever the expression of your best gift is. In our case, hugs, giving out love, fierce love, blind love, comes from a place that we were denied it, and that it wasn't available to us. And because everybody wants to express it, everybody wants to get to that equilibrium, we're all designed as love, then that paucity, that lack, that scarcity of it, then when we have a chance, it breaks out. And of course, it flips 180 degrees, right, to being just as powerful on the other side. Because, yeah, I mean, same thing. You know, San Francisco, the energy there broke both of us out, because that's where love got concentrated when consciousness took a shift in the 60s. And it stayed there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's where we are now, you know, with this. Shelter-in-place corona thing, we're at that shift again. And it's such a dramatic one that now we're all, like you said, with guys having to face their own business, you know, like now we're all inside. Everybody has to face themselves. So, you know, this is another one of those junctures and opportunities where we get to turn back to love.
Yeah, I mean, I said before, I'm hoping that, you know, people come out of this idea with realizing that not doing handshakes as much anymore, because that's what transmits the germs. Hugging doesn't normally, there's normally very little skin contact. It's just beyond skin. It's a beyond skin what happens. And I think less germs and more love would be transmitted. Maybe we change the actual society norms, the rituals that we do. Where, I mean, that's just my hopeful idea that would happen. You know, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, right now we can't go out and hug, and if we did, we'd be looked at as psychopaths and sociopaths or whatever, right? But two things are happening here. You know, now that everybody is physically distant, not socially distant actually, because you know we're actually now being online as much as people are with the Zoom phenomenon, with everything that's happening. We're actually more socially connected in meaningful ways than we were previously to this, I think. But the physical distancing is the part that is an issue. And the thing about it is, though, that we are now all, everybody is wanting a hug. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed this on social media. More people that you wouldn't even think would normally say this, at least I've seen this, have go out and they'll just post somewhere in a post, "I could really use a hug right now. Oh, my gosh, I wish I could be around you people. I would hug you." And people who are posting it, at least on my streams, are folks on the left coast. Some of them might be listening now. Some of them who listen to this might hear it later. But they're the people that I would think previously they're like, I'm too cool for that. You know, it's cool. Tech does it. But, you know, I'm not really a hugger. Even though they're like burners or whatever, you know, they're like, they're still kind of aloof and like keeping their ego separated from it. Like, oh, that's just kind of silly, but I think it's cute that he does it, you know? And they're the ones who would never go out and hug with me and I put out invites. But now I see him, I wish I could have a hug right now. I'd hug all of you. I'm like, right? It just takes you being away from other people to see that you really physically need this. So whenever this is over or whatever stages we can get to, paradoxically, we're going to come out of this as some of the most influential movements of people out there, because we're going to be out there doing one thing that we know how to do, that we've been doing for a while, and that gives us no fear. We're going to be out getting a chance to lead other people in creating a new societal norm where physical embraces are the standard, and we've gotten rid of that handshake stuff, which is physically don't touch me, et cetera. I mean, look, if you don't want to hug me, that's cool. You can shake my hand. But I know now that more people are really going to want that expression of love because they've been completely physically distant from any kind of other human interaction. So, our day is coming, brother. We're going to be on the front edge of this.
Yeah, we're going to have to be disciples out there spreading the hugging word, right? That's what we got to do. We have to all come together, you know, from all over. You know, I've been talking to people in
Jesus
different countries.
Hands?
What you say?
Jesus didn't shake hands. You think Jesus shook hands? I don't think he shook hands.
No, probably not. I'm not sure. I don't know.
If you're out there giving love to the lepers, you're not. I mean, you know, it's all love. That's just it. Like everybody's me. So, we're going to have so many people evangelizing it. People will be out there you've never thought of. They'll be out there with signs the minute they can get out there. And that's why, you know, that's why you and I and everybody else should be keeping preaching this, because there's a massive pent-up demand for it. You're going to get more hugs per hour than you ever got.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've got to come together to get it on that. So let me ask you another question. So I don't know a lot about it. You keep talking about Burning Man. Can you talk to me a little about, I know you go to that a lot. I know some people have gone to it. I'm going to be honest, I'm a little intimidated by the festival myself. I've never been to it. So maybe you could talk to us a little about it, because I know you know it very well.
Yeah. Boy, where do we start? That's a good question. Tell me about Burning Man. So the first thing I say to people when they ask me that question is that Burning Man is hard to explain. It's like trying to explain color to a blind person. So to that end, I'm trying to make it easy. So back in the 60s, you had Woodstock, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Burning Man is essentially Woodstock in the desert 50 years later. So the principles of love and connection and taking care of each other and, you know, we're all going to come together and make a better world. That's really the basics of Burning Man, but it's just wrapped in this container of we're going to go out in the desert, we're going to have a gathering, and we're going to do that, but we're going to show that we can do it and take care of ourselves completely in a super harsh environment, and at the same time bring all of our love and bring our art, et cetera. So, it started as 30 some odd artists who went out to the beach in San Francisco to celebrate summer solstice. And as tribes mm-hmm. typically do, tribally forever, you know, they'll burn an effigy. They'll do something to signify the end of one season and the start of a new time. And, you know, sacrificing or burning this thing to whatever deities or whatever belief system they had. Only now, you know, when they did at the beach, it was the same kind of a thing, just a lot more fun. It grew. They got kicked off the beach years later when too many people came. And in a short time, some of them had been out to the desert. They thought it was a great place to do it when nobody would bother them. And now 30-plus mm-hmm. years later, there it is. You know, that it became a worldwide movement. And it's just the idea that we can all come together, we can all learn from each other, and we can gather for a week at a time. And there's 40 regional burns now around the world, not just one, and learn from each other. And there's 10 commandments, basically, or 10 principles, you know, we call them, you know, same kind of scenario where rules we try to live by as people who proclaim to, you know, be involved in the art and, you know, this social movement. And those are, you know, taking care of each other, civic responsibility, radical self-expression, you know, express who you are, radical acceptance. You know, like everybody's welcome who comes here. Leave no trace. You know, we go in there to the desert, one of the most harshest environments in the world, the alkaline dust desert, the Black Rock in northern Nevada. But you take everything out, you take everything back. There's no trash can. You are the trash can. So it's a massive experiment of so thrusting yourself into a situation where there's no internet, there's no television, there's no advertising allowed. It's just you.
No internet. Oh, 80,000. Cool.
Yeah. Like no ads, no nothing. Just you expressing yourself, bringing your art, the big art, the small art, whatever it is, and just doing that. And sharing who you are, what your art, what your love is. And
well, there's probably no signal out there anyway, is there?
Well, I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, there are signals. Towers have been added in some of the areas of the desert surrounding it, but very few. If there is a signal, it's probably because somebody brought their own. But, you know, I can't tell people how to burn. I just don't like the fact that they bring signal and, you know, they want to be out there connected to the rest of the world. But, yeah, so that's really it. You know, it's a big, massive art and love movement that we're only there to teach each other and teach other people, you know, to teach other people to find who they are and how to express that.
And I'm assuming it's not a kid-friendly experience.
No, it totally is. That's just it. People don't think
it is.
I mean, people have been conceived out there, almost born out there and grown up out there. We have, for people who really want to experience it with their kids, and maybe, you know, you can do that anywhere in Burning Man, but there is actually a village called Kidsville where parents with their kids, if you want to be in that environment, there is an entire village of people who are doing that, typically a couple of hundred, maybe 300 people strong. And that's just one option, you know, and that's that area where it's specifically designed for families and kids. But overall, the idea is that, you know, it is a kid-friendly experience, but not every part is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you mean,
so you can avoid it, like trying to avoid the red
yeah,
light
totally.
District or something like that.
Yeah, and, you know, nudity happens, but nudity is nudity. It isn't nudity expressed for, you know, the idea of titillation. Or, you know, anything
okay.
like that. And we do have societal or, you know, cultural rules, if you want to call them that, about, you know, yeah, you can't be out there naked doing something you should be doing in the privacy of wherever that is. Because, you know, that's frowned upon. And I've caught people, and I've yelled at them with a bullhorn. And, you know, things like that. So, but it's
what about drugs?
Because, what about them? Oh, so here's the official line. You shouldn't do them there. It's illegal. It's anything you're talking about beyond cannabis is illegal in Nevada anyway. And on federal Bureau of Land Management land, BLM, all that's illegal. So you shouldn't be doing it. It's illegal. Now, if you're asking me about does it happen, absolutely it happens. The whole experience, even without psychedelics, is a psychedelic experience for many people because of energy and then being thrust into this, you know, situation where it is, where you have to be present, et cetera. But sure, they happen, and they absolutely can accelerate your experience.
Mm-hmm. I lost you.
I'm here. Hello?
I lost you for a minute.
Okay. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. Yeah, I lost you.
Okay. So, they're totally there, and they can absolutely, you know, accelerate your experience.
Okay. You're opening my eyes. I never really talked to anybody. I think the assumption that I have, a lot of people have, I think they do, to where they think it's like a crazy hedonistic that I could never bring my kid to, and it's just going to be too wild for me. So I'm glad you're clearing me up on my false assumptions of what I thought about bringing him was. And it's really hot out there, so I would think, I mean, you just like, are you not miserable in the desert? I mean, that's what's coming into my head. Like, it's hot as hell.
Sure it is. And it's cold, too. I mean, if you see people wear the fun fur, it's cold at night because there's nothing to, you know, get away from. I mean, it's wide open, flat, alkaline dust, desert that can get up to 100 plus during the day and as low as the 40s at night. I mean, that's just it. It's there to break you, and I didn't really understand that. I mean, I used to hear stories that, like, one of the anecdotal things people would tell you, it's like, you've never been to Burning Man? Okay, here's how you get ready. And they would say, you know, put yourself in the middle of a 12-foot square room with no windows and surround the edges of the room with high-speed fans and heaters and speakers. And then put on the best clothes you've got for a costume, something you really, really want to wear that you worked on for a while that's like Halloween plus, and go stand in the middle of the room and be, but don't, when you get to the middle of the room, be awake for 24 hours already. Don't have anything to drink for at least a few hours. Forget to poop for at least a day, and then have all those clothes on, and then somebody turns on the worst music that you really hate the most at about 110 decibels. They turn on all the heaters, and then they turn on the fan, and then they turn on a bunch of blinky lights, and someone walks in the middle of the room with all that and throws like 10 pounds of talcum powder into the middle of the room. And now stand there for about 30 minutes.
So
that's
Jack,
Burning Man.
Why do I want to go to Burning Man?
because...
I mean, my brother, you ain't the greatest PR firm for Burning Man.
No,
right?
You're getting there. You're going to get there. You're going to love this. Because right when you're at your breaking point and you've surrendered to all of that BS and you just want to die and you just want to take your stuff and leave and go home, and most people do 3 or 4 days in if they can't take it. They don't stay the whole time. They leave. But at that 31st minute, then somebody comes along and gives you a great hug, or somebody you did never expect to meet comes and walks through that door, and it makes your day. And they have a story to tell you, or you have an experience that both of you, you're instantly flipped so far away from that. You're in the middle of love, and you are wrapped in that conversation and all that other stuff, the heaters, the talcum powder, the dust. Nothing matters at that point. And suddenly you're shown, because the reason it's so harsh, the reason all that stuff is there, is to strip you away from your comfort zone. To strip it so far away that you have nothing else to hold on to anymore. And that's the idea. It's that level of hardship, if you want to call it that, is concentrated just to break you down to the point where light can come in. I mean, that's how I see it. And a lot of people will tell you that in different ways, but that's the point. You know, it's a mecca. It's a journey. You know, sure, it's it's a great party in the desert, but, you know, as famously said by a friend of mine who is deep in the organization, said, if this was just a party in the desert, I wouldn't want to go. Why would I want to go to a place that harsh and deal with that? Nobody does. It's awful. Yeah. But you go there because you know that 80,000 or some odd other people went with the same intention as you had to give your art, to give your love. And just like when you're out giving out hugs and your life has changed, you know, or your day has changed when the right person comes in and hugs you, gives you the message, that synchronicity happens. Imagine that level of synchronicity happening dozens of times a day. Like, I started counting them 3 years ago with a hand clicker, like when you count people coming into a club or an event. And I counted 7 days of Burning Man. I counted 375 synchronicities.
Wow. So you go for 7 days.
Well, typically we're there for 12 or 13 days, but the event itself is only 7 official days. So we're talking getting there early, building camp, breaking down, the whole thing. So we've been there for 2 weeks, typically. But yeah. But that's the reason you go.
So when you first started going, how long did you go for? How many days?
I think even the first time was eight or nine because we got there a day early and left a day late, so it was probably like 9. Yeah.
And you prepared? You locked yourself in a room and did all that stuff?
That's just it. Like, we had been around the community so long that we were already kind of used to some of this, and we had been out to the desert for other camping trips with burners that are unofficial or before Burning Man. You know, typically around 4th of July, people go out there. And so we were already used to the environment, but nothing could have prepared me for that level of awe and wonder and scale and sight and sound. I mean, doesn't matter where you've been before, nothing can prepare you for the experience of being in the middle of that in the desert. It's like AI by Steven Spielberg, that movie. AI meets Xanadu, meets Alice in Wonderland, meets Vegas on steroids. I mean, it's so.
When people just walking around, connecting, and there's no cell phones, pretty much. That sounds awesome. That part sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, there's no cell phones. People are just, it really is choose your own adventure, you know, because there's limitless things to do and see and experience. And the best way to experience it really is just to go with no expectations and just go and just be. And it's very, very difficult for most people, you know. So that's why people go once and they never go back, or, you know, they go and they leave early because they think it's going to be one thing. They think it's going to be all the things that the video show them. Like, oh, this is the biggest party ever and everybody's half naked and the music's great and everything is free and sex and drugs and that. No, sure, that's available. Totally available at all times, and you can find it, but it's a city of people living together in the middle of the desert where there's public workers, volunteers who are our police, quote unquote, force, the rangers to keep us safe, to help everybody. There's emergency services, there's doctors, there's nurses, there's people who work on keeping the city running. You know, there's a Department of Public Works, they keep the city running. You know, it's like 3,000 or 4,000 people at all times, keeping a city running with communication. You know, we have coffee. The only thing you can buy is coffee and ice. You know, we have ice stations, people who have to run that. So, and then you have hundreds and hundreds of camps who are just there, just doing their thing, giving their gift away. It's not always about the big art and the spectacle. It could be a camp that's teaching you 10 different ways to lace your shoes. That's their gift. Maybe they're the shoelacing camp. All the ways you can learn to tie a scarf, whatever it is. That's their thing, you know. They got 10 people who tie scarves all day and teach you how to take care of yourself if all you have is a scarf and a fork. You know, I don't know.
Is your money good there? Do you buy stuff there?
No, that's it. There's no money. There's no money.
Whatsoever.
The economy is strictly just you give your gifts, you know. There's no barter. I mean, sure, things like this happen. I get that. But, yeah, there's no barter. There's no money. It's just you going, taking extra for other people, and learning how to take care of each other that way. through gifting, through sharing, you know, like that is come together, learn, and take care of each other. So, money's no good unless you're buying ice.
Unless you're buying ice.
Ice or coffee.
What's the gift that you bring, that you brought in the past, that you've given to people? I'm curious. Obviously, it's the hugs, but is there something else?
Mm-hmm. Well, for 7 years, I did Why the Nose was my project. So my gift has been photography and clown noses.
Okay.
Before hugging, you know the story, but for people who are listening, before hugging for 7 years in public, almost 100% of the time, dressed otherwise normally, I just wore a clown nose on my face when I went out in public.
Mm.
Just to get people to look up and smile and have a moment of presence and kind of change their day. And when they would do that and they would ask me why the nose, why are you wearing that nose, then I would tell them so we could have a conversation. So, you know, we're not on our phones. Get people to look up in their phones and connect.
Mm.
And I would hand them nose, and I would transfer that gift to them, and I would give them a clown nose. And that happened at Burning Man, along with the quote-unquote real world. And at Burning Man, I gave out 5,000 a year. Other people took it on as well. So in 7 years of Burning Man and the global regional network around Burning Man, all the other events, something like almost half a million noses went out to the world. So Why the Nose was my gift. And I would take pictures of people at Burning Man who I gave noses to. We made videos with a friend of mine. So we made something like 25 music videos in and around the Burning Man community as well.
Hmm. Hmm.
So that was my previous art and gift.
So you said you wore the nose and nothing else? You didn't have clothes on?
No, I mean, I wore the nose with, like, dressed otherwise normally, you know, just literally.
Oh, okay. You're walking around
whatever I was wearing
with
for the day. Oh, God, no. That's crazy. No, literally just me.
You definitely get noticed doing that, for sure.
Yeah, you get noticed.
Have you taken any newbies there? Have you taken any newbies people in with you?
Yeah, many times. Like, in probably 15 trips to the playa, we've taken new people 5 or 6 times. Straight up just like hosted them, people who we knew that needed to go or wanted to go. And even our first year, we hosted somebody. Our first official year at Burning Man, we took a friend who now, all this time later, is on the board of directors at Burning Man. Like, you know, he.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a magic thing. But that's the thing, you know, it's kind of like, if it's a Mason, who says each one teach one? I forget it.
Uh-huh.
One of the, you know, Masons or somebody does, you know, they have this saying, each one teach one. So a lot of people like
I
us.
I think it's the Masons.
Bring...
I think it's the Freemasons. Yeah.
That's
what it is.
And so, yeah, we love taking new people. But in the past few years, we've not done so because now we have enough to do ourselves with art that we're happy to support new people who are there. And oftentimes they're in our camp, but we don't take on the responsibility fully of taking anybody who's new.
Yeah, I'm assuming everybody brings their own car so they can get out of there if they need to.
Sometimes. I mean, a lot of people will come in as like a van or group thing or, you know, there's a limited number of vehicle passes, and that started a few years ago. So the idea is that we don't want everybody to bring their own car. We want you to somehow carpool or share resources, but... Yeah, I mean, out of 80,000 people, there's definitely a lot of cars and RVs, and, you know, when people want to leave, they want to be able to get out of there. So, you know, if you're not in a situation like that, you're in for the whole ride until your ride's ready to leave.
If the newbies come, did they come with you in the car? So they're stuck, right?
The newbies that came with us each time, two of them were my other half-sons. They were stuck with us, but the other people came in their own vehicle. So,
uh-huh.
and our friend who's now on the board actually flew in to Reno, and I got him on a ride in along with a bunch of other people in like an old 70s a 70s limo guy was driving in, had about 9 people in it. And then I got him out of there by walking to the area where people are leaving. near our gates in, and stood out there with his bags and a sign, and in about 30 minutes found somebody leaving who had room, and they took him back to Reno, and he flew out. So he did it. He did it via the community both ways.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And is it all ages there pretty much?
All ages. Yeah, anywhere from, you know, newborns to, I think there's been plenty of people in their 90s. We've met people in their 90s. Yeah, that's just it. Like, it's the world. You know, the Burning Man is, at its best, is a microcosm of the macrocosm. You know, so everybody's there of all faiths, shapes, sizes, colors, nationalities, ages, everything. It really is the world coming together.
You got to be pretty bummed it's not going to be this year.
Well, I already had, I've kind of been planning it in my heart. And then when I learned before it was announced that it was going to be canceled, I got resolved to that. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to miss the gathering of people. You know, that's the one thing I'm going to miss is that at any time at Burning Man, I could walk out of my camp to one of the main roads or streets, and we're camped in the very middle of it. So we're usually only 50 or 100 feet from a major thoroughfare. And I can just go out there any time of the day with a hug sign and just meet people. Like, anytime I want to go out and just meet people and get stories and get connected and have an experience, a connection to a real human, I can just go do that. And that's not going to, you know, I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss being able to go to any camp or just go walking at Burning Man and get pulled into an adventure and within minutes be friends with one, two, or up to a dozen people. Because, you know, I know you haven't been, but, you know, it's to have this environment of pure love and in an interactivity to the level that I like it, immediately available for 7, 10, 11, 13, 14 days is incomparable. You can't compare it. You can't replace it. No other festival, no other gathering really does. So I'm going to miss that. But, you know, I'm not missing the fact that now the community is coming together and are doing their own things. They're all around the world and are planning to make their own versions of it, potentially even with smaller gatherings all over the world now. So, you know, it is what it is. But at, like all things, you know, it had grown to a point where it needed to have a reset as well. And this is the reset that Burning Man has been needing.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking if I went, I'd need to buy like a Costco thing size of sunscreen because I get sunburned like hell. So I can see that being a big problem.
SPF 100. Shade is your best friend out there, and everybody has shade.
Yeah, that's a premium, hard to find, I'm sure.
Well, everybody builds it.
Put up all kinds of structures.
Oh, yeah, like Costco 10x20 shade structures are a standard out there. And, you know,
I assume you got a big tent.
We got a 10x20 shade structure that we usually park a van under. Last year we parked a geodesic dome style, like ice fishing tent underneath our shade structure. So we had a 10x20 plot with a great bedroom that had an air conditioner in it and our kitchen, and everything was groovy. But we only take up, you know, a 10x20 plot.
Did you say ice fishing?
Yeah, little ice fishing tents, the ones that, you know, with those up, they just.
Okay.
And they make them, they're like a little dome that just pops up, takes about 2 minutes.
Okay. I was just thinking ice fishing in the middle of Burning Man. I don't know. I mean, they can pull off a lot of things at Burning Man, but I don't know how they pull that off.
No ice fishing. Yeah, just a little ice fishing tent. And because those are really insulated as well, so you get a little tiny air conditioner in there and turn it on.
Gotcha.
And it can be 110 outside and it's like 50 degrees in your tent. You take a nap.
Okay. So people bring a lot of generators out there, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they bring whatever they need. Typically, yeah, tons of generators. You know, we camp in a village that is 400 people and builds its own grid. You know, so we've got two massive diesel generators powering up to 400 people's needs. And, you know, we keep our needs low, but still, you know, we do have a grid that we actually build in that village for ourselves. So a big camp.
I'm obviously it's much harder, but it sounds like kind of like a tailgate party in a lot of ways at a football game, right? But much more brutal, you know, much more going on that you have to do.
Much more going on. Yeah, much more brutal, much more going on, but same concept. And everybody's bringing gifts, whether it's physical gifts or their gift of art or their gifts of whatever themselves, if it's massage or singing or teaching you how to tie rope, you know, whatever your gift is, you know, it's that party atmosphere with intention as well.
How cold does it get at night?
I've seen it in the high 30s.
Really? So you got to prepare.
Oh, yeah.
Really hot and really cold.
Yeah, yeah. So when you see people wearing the, you know, all the fur, all the fake fur,
mm-hmm.
that's why. Because it could be 110 Wednesday afternoon, and that night it could be 41 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't expect to talk to you so much about this, but it really intrigued me. And honestly, I would never even in my wildest dreams consider going to this thing until I talked to you today. And I might, it sounds like something I might actually like.
Oh, you'd love it.
I think I would. Whether I can talk my wife and my kids to do that, that's a different story altogether. But it might be better without my kids there. Maybe I'll come with my wife at some point in some year. Bring my free hugs down and get some more stuff going.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. It would change you, but it wouldn't break you. I can tell, but it would accelerate what you're already doing, the path you're already on.
And in vain with that freeing experience, I want to tell you something, and I think you'll probably relate to this that I hadn't told anybody about. You know LinkedIn, right?
Mm-hmm.
I decided, as a symbolic gesture, I basically eliminated my whole profile. I took everything off of there, and just I feel like I'm in from 3 years ago. I'm a totally new person. I took away all my recommendations, my school history, everything, and I just put my name up there and Hug It Out America, pretty much, because like mm-hmm. I feel like I just want to be born anew. And I told some of my friends who are corporate, and they thought I was flat crazy. I'm like, I feel like I'm a new person, and I don't want to be all those things. Those things don't matter to me anymore. So
yeah,
kind of a symbolic gesture made me think of your Burning Man thing about kind of freeing yourself and letting go about what's not important and all that kind of stuff. So that's interesting. Well, it's good having you on today, Tex. We had a couple callers on, but I didn't. I kind of was interested in talking to you. This is kind of a one-on-one thing, get to know you more than anything, and find out about you, and our listeners can hear all about you and find out more about you. And I love hearing about Burning Man and all the hug stuff, and hopefully, you know, we'll get out there soon. Hugging. Did I lose you? Hello? Something happened. You there? Man, I lost everything. Caller dropped. I think I lost my guest here. And I lost the other guest. Well, that's what happens when you're relying on technology and running a live radio show. You lose the people that you want to talk to. Tex, I thank you for calling in and learning all about your hug, which I knew a little bit about, and learning about Burning Man and another year. I may actually head out there by myself with my wife or with the whole family in tow, maybe even our dog Dixie. But so sorry for missing all y'all who called in. I was really getting in. I hope you learned a lot from Tex. He's a guy who, like I said before, wraps himself around everybody. And he's like a no-fear hug guy. And I love that about him. I admire that about him. So you can always check out these radio shows streaming on demand on my website, 50hugs.org/radio. And you can find out, you know, I've had 10 or 12 from people all over. And then later on this week, Starting Wednesday, I'll have Nate Saul. He's going to come on and talk about his chocolate company, Cocoterra, an amazing new product he's making. He's going to talk about all the cool thing he's doing in the world. And then, like I said before at the beginning of the show, Thursday, my buddy Scott Hogue, I met through Hugging Out America, who's a great musician, a great songwriter, and just funny as hell, is going to come on the show. And then Friday, it's going to be like, who knows? We have some special guest and special topic. I kind of like to leave that open. I kind of like to leave it free form. But until tomorrow I'm off, and then Wednesday and Thursday be back on Friday. So thanks for tuning in today, and God bless America, y'all, and hug it out, America, and take care. Have a good day. Bye-bye.